May it please the court.
You may proceed.
My name is Brian McGovern, and I represent Gateway Taxi Management, doing business as Laclede Cab. For purposes of consistency, I will refer to appellant as Laclede Cab in my argument. There's two issues on appeal. The first, a very simple question, a very direct question, and that's whether or not Laclede pays wages to the drivers. The second, and that's only if you find that wages are paid to the drivers, is whether or not these drivers qualify as independent contractors. I think it's important to understand the business of Laclede before addressing those questions. Laclede is in the business of leasing cabs. That's what it does. Its customers are the drivers. The drivers, in turn, have customers who are the consumers who utilize their services. In essence, all Laclede does is lease the cab to the driver. They refer to that lease as a pro forma. Once that happens, Laclede's relationship and obligation to that driver ends.
Well, that's not true. There's lots of rules and regulations. You rely on them yourself in saying that you enforce them and don't let them drive unless they comply with the VCM and so forth.
What you're referring to, Your Honor, is the vehicle for hire code, and that's correct. The Metropolitan
Tax... But you enforce it. They don't enforce it. You enforce it on the drivers.
Actually, the Metropolitan Taxi Commission has an enforcement arm. They have inspectors who are out in the street. The city is deputized as officers who will also enforce the code. We, as a company, have a CCM, which is issued by the Metropolitan Taxi Commission.
Aren't the cab companies on the Metropolitan Taxi Commission?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Doesn't the Metropolitan Taxi Commission include the taxi companies on that commission?
It does. The legislature created the Metropolitan Taxi Commission to have 9 members. The legislature enacted that statute, directing that the county executive, as well as the city, the mayor, would be the ones to appoint 9 members to the commission. 4 of them come from the taxi industry. 3 of them are actually owners of the cab companies. 1 of them is actually a taxi cab driver. So the idea, the suggestion from respondent that the owners somehow control the commission really is a misstatement. There's only 3 of them who sit on the commission, but that was as designated by the legislature.
Council, what happens when the inspectors find violations? If a
violation is found under the vehicle for hire code, they will issue a citation to that particular driver.
To the driver, not to you.
Correct.
You don't lose your license if the drivers violate the code.
I'm not aware of that happening, Your Honor, because the drivers themselves also have to have a license from the Metropolitan Taxi Commission. They have to go through background checks. They have to go through a series of applications with them to get that license, and it would be their license that would be put in jeopardy. Okay. The requirements of the vehicle for hire code, for example, that they wear a white shirt and black pants, that's from the code. They're expected to do that. If they don't, they would put their own license in jeopardy.
Then why do you require them to obey the code?
It's really the Metropolitan Taxi Commission who requires them to obey the code. That's the one who enforces
I know it requires them to do certain things, but my understanding is you require them when they're hired to do that. If they don't agree to do it, they will be fired. Is that not correct?
That's not correct, Your Honor. There's nothing in the record to suggest that would be true. The only evidence in the record is that they all understood, the 2 individuals who testified, Mr. Berry and Mr. Parent, that they, in fact, had to comply with the terms of the vehicle for hire code, and they understood that it was Metropolitan Taxi Commission who enforced it. Again, the only relationship that Laclede Cab has with these particular drivers is that once they pay the pro forma, or once they pay that lease, the obligation really ends. The second function that Laclede does perform for them is the processing of credit cards. The code requires that the taxi cab accept credit cards. Laclede Cab provides that service. The taxi cab drivers do not have to use Laclede Cab to process their credit cards. So that is something else that Laclede Cab does provide. Now, it's also important to note that once that cab is leased, and there's 2 ways in which they can do it, an open shift, 24 hours, or a shift lease, which is 12 hours, that driver can work whatever hours he chooses. He can collect whatever fares and go out and get as many fares as he wants. He keeps no logbook. He reports in no way.
Council, what's our standard of review here, since we're reviewing not a trial court decision, but the commission?
I think the standard of review is whether or not the decision is based upon competent substantial evidence and whether or not the facts support the decision as rendered by the commission.
But you're saying that the facts most favorably to your side, which is understandable, but didn't the commission find that, in fact, realistically, you couldn't use any other credit card company and no one did, it wasn't realistic? And didn't they find that, in fact, you controlled whether they could use cell phones and other aspects of their behavior and a lot of other facts that they might or might have found differently based on your arguments, but they didn't? So the reason I'm asking this is an important issue on this appeal is the standard of review. And the question is, did they get it wrong? Now, what would we do in the first instance?
In all due respect to the commission, I suggest they got it wrong. I mean, the vehicle for hire code has specific restrictions in it that says you cannot use your cell phone while a passenger is in the car or while on a thoroughfare. That would pretty much encompass most of the time in which the cab would be utilized. From the standpoint of other restrictions, requirements, I don't think the commission got it right. I think as you look through the analysis that they perform, it is not supported by the substantial and competent evidence on the record, which I would point to the testimony of Mr. Berry, Mr. Parent, who were both witnesses on behalf of the Division of Employment Security, as well as the testimony of Mr. McNutt. The findings that were made are not supported when you read that transcript and read that record.
Okay.
From the standpoint then of the facts.
And so let's see, you're talking about the cell phones.
Yes, sir.
If they were sitting at a hotel and they got a cell phone call while sitting there, pick up this ride or someone wants to go back to the airport or something like that, that would be all legitimate.
From the standpoint of the vehicle for hire code, the individual could sit there and do that. At that time, it was the position of the LaClee cab not to use the cell phones.
So that was the position of the LaClee cab, not the taxi commission.
In your limited example, yes, Your Honor.
And it may have a business interest because the LaClee cab wants them to use, the LaClee cab says on the management phones they can't use the phones to take orders or follow up on orders. And that's beyond the safety provisions, which of course are safe. You don't want people using phones when they're driving.
That's correct, Your Honor. But from the standpoint of the requirements of the drivers, it is also a requirement and restriction contained within the code itself. From the standpoint of the exercise of control, you know, the position, and if we think the evidence demonstrated that any control over these drivers and the means and manner and method by which they perform their job is all dictated by the code.
Then why did you have rules that they had to follow? If it was just the code, why did you adopt your own set of rules?
Actually, Your Honor, we didn't. There is no evidence in the record to suggest that LaClee had any set of rules. What it did have was an independent contractor agreement, and that's where the reference to the cell phones came from. LaClee does not have any separate set of rules, which is very much different than the Higgins case, a case relied upon by the Division of Employment Security, where Ms. Higgins enacted 41 separate rules, a 5-page booklet, which she entitled Rules for the Taxicab Drivers. But the other significant difference in terms of the manner in which LaClee does business as compared to the others is the revenue sharing. Your point, Your Honor, is that once that cab is leased, there is no further relationship between LaClee and what that driver does. He can work 1 hour a day, he could work 12 hours. He could pick up fares, he can reject any fare he chooses. That driver keeps no logbook and no record whatsoever of the revenue he generates.
Well, but
what about school runs?
You're speaking of the vouchers. There was
right.
A voucher system, there is some deliveries or some picks up which they use a voucher, which is treated very much like a credit card. So if in fact a voucher is used to take a student to school, the driver will submit that voucher, it'll be processed, the 10% fee would be taken, just as it would with the credit card. That was my point earlier in terms of if there's any service provided by LaClee, it is the processing of that credit card.
Now, who takes a 10% fee? That's a little high in most commercial transactions when you use a credit card. I think it's more like 3%. Who dictates that 10%? The taxi commission says you shall pay 10%?
I believe LaClee Cab had established the rate at the 10%. It has changed over the years, is my understanding, Your Honor.
And that's your rule?
I'm sorry?
It's changed over the years. Go ahead.
Well, actually, it's not a rule because the driver doesn't have to use LaClee if he chooses not to. He could go out and have his own account. He could use, as we have seen, the squares. If you've walked into an Apple store and watched them swipe your credit card on their Apple phones, he doesn't have to use LaClee. If he chooses to, at that time there was a 10% fee that was charged.
And the vouchers?
Vouchers would be treated the same way.
They could use it. How would they contract? Do they contract with the schools or you contract with the schools?
The company contracts with the school.
And so the company contracts with the schools and they give them the vouchers. That's a substantial income, I assume, for the drivers. And you charge 10% on each of these vouchers?
I don't think it is a substantial part of the business, Your Honor. The substantial part of the business that they do is cash and as well as the credit card. There are some voucher accounts, but that's not a substantial part.
I thought the evidence was that almost all their fares were dispatch fares. Is that correct?
Which is a different system, Your Honor. They in fact are dispatch, but the driver does
and
not.
And that everybody uses the CLEAT, and they. I mean, I understand there's a lot of evidence from your point of view, but there wasn't there contrary evidence. At least that certainly was discussed in the briefs. That in fact they never had time to do anything but take dispatches because they were required to do dispatches first, or at least that was the vast majority of their work, that they didn't use other credit card systems, they weren't explained how to do that, that all of them in fact use yours, and so many things. I understand how that you presented evidence that they had a lot of freedom, but there was other evidence. Again, going back to the standard of review, you're asking us to reweigh this, it seems to me, in a way that we don't normally do in review of the evidence.
But there was it, though, Your Honor. If you were to take a look at the record, and particularly the testimony of Mr. Berry, and I say Mr. Berry because he worked there for 6 or 7 months. Mr. Parent worked only for 2 weeks. When you look at his testimony was he could do whatever he chose, and in fact, he did that. He didn't have to take a dispatch. Now, a lot of them, the way the dispatch system worked, as you understand my comment, once the dispatch goes out to a particular driver, the driver, and it's going to the driver who's closest to that potential fare, the driver has the opportunity simply to reject it. He takes the screen, he punches reject, and it then goes to the next driver. Mr. Berry's testimony was that he could do that anytime he chose. In fact, there were days he could choose not to work. There were days he could choose to take his family different locations or drive his friends. Once he paid his pro, he was unrestricted. His testimony, I think, best describes the relationship when he said, effectively, I was running my own little business.
Who establishes the mileage rate?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Who establishes the mileage rate?
I'm not sure, Your Honor.
What you pay per mile?
I understand. And what you see posted on the side of the vehicle, right. I'm not sure who establishes that.
But that's different from cab company to cab company, so it couldn't be.
I don't think it's the commission. I've read the vehicle for hire code. I've read a lot of information with respect to what they promulgate, what they put out, and I've not seen anything in there that dictates.
And that's a competition between the cab companies.
I think it is, Your Honor. I think the cab companies set those rates.
The driver can't put down there and say, I'll do it for 10% less than what technically cab says I'm going to pay. Even though they're an independent contractor, as you say, they can't say, well, the cab company says it's $1.35 per mile. I only charge a dollar. They can't do that, can they?
I don't think the driver can do that.
Now you're saying, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No.
Now you're saying you think that, but I didn't see anything in the record with respect to the rate.
There is nothing in the record that demonstrates or dictates how the rate is determined.
Right.
But I'm trying to just to answer the question.
I understand that.
I believe it's the cab company who does that, but there is nothing in the record to suggest
right.
that.
Right.
I know you're out of time, but I'd like to have you address your wage argument, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Taking the business model that we've now discussed, knowing that what effectively happens here is that Laclede Cab is simply reconciling the payment of the pro and the charge, the 10% for the credit card processing. The rest is simply being paid back, or what we've referred to in the record as change, to the driver. From our standpoint, then, we take those facts, we look at the applicable law to determine whether or not what the driver received is wages. And what the law tells us in 288.090, expressly provides the amount that employers are required to contribute to the unemployment compensation fund is limited to wages paid by employers. Section 0.2 goes on to say, each employer shall pay contributions at the average industry rate established for the preceding calendar year, or 2 7/10% of taxable wages paid by it. The statute goes on and has similar language, shall pay contributions equal to 1% of wages paid by it. The division's approach is to effectively take the paid-by-it language out of the statute as if it doesn't exist. If, in fact, that is what they want to accomplish, then that is something that the General Assembly will have to do. From our position, we look at this from the standpoint strictly of the law. Tax laws must be strictly construed against the taxing authority. The division's brief recognizes this issue, and they recognize the significance of determining whether wages are paid when they say, if the money or fares received by drivers from Laclede's customers is not remuneration payable or paid by Laclede, the drivers are not covered by the Missouri Employment Security Law. The division agrees. There is no evidence to suggest that the money going from Laclede to the drivers is in fact a wage. In fact, Renee Rodrick, who testified she was the auditor on behalf of the Division of Employment Security. When questioned about whether or not what she saw in the cash-out column was a wage or not, or what was it, she simply indicated it was a payment. When pressed on those questions, she said it is not a commission, it is not a wage, it is simply a reconciliation of the pro collected, less the 10% fee, if in fact they used a credit card, less the pro forma. So her evidence, the testimony from the division, was that it is not a wage. The last point, if I could make, Your Honor, from the standpoint of the division's position, if in fact the division's position is accepted, a driver goes out on a particular day and he gets all cash fares. He will not, he will have paid his pro, he would not have submitted credit cards, so nothing would have come back to him. There would be no change. In that instance, according to the division, there would be no tax. If in fact the driver goes out and works an entire day and he processes the credit card, but he doesn't use the CLEED for that service, he pays the pro, which he can do at any time he wishes, and nothing comes back to him because he has utilized a third-party credit card company to process that credit card. Again, according to the division, there would be no tax.
Well, you said he pays the pro whenever he wants to. They have to pay the pro every day, don't they?
They do, Your Honor, but it doesn't have to come out of his fares. He could pay
it
directly.
I'm just saying, you said whenever they want to pay it, they have to pay it every day.
I meant simply it doesn't have to be from the fare submitted.
And I may have missed part of what you just said. So what does the commission say tax is owed on? Is it of what amount of the pro? Because I know there's a different pro that's paid whether they lease the cab or whether they use their own cabin, they use your dispatch service, they pay different amounts and so
forth. There's three different ways. One is what they...
And what part is taxed according to the commission? I understand you think none of it is.
If you look at Ms. Rodriguez's testimony, they don't know. Because when you look at the cash out column, all you see is money going from the CLEED.
Well, they must have said you owe X tax. What was that based on?
We don't know. Well, it was based on the cash out column. I'm sorry, Your Honor. So you may have an instance in which an individual worked an entire day. Most of those fares would have been cash. He processed one fare, which was a credit card, and so maybe $18. You know, once he paid the pro, he paid his 10% to process the credit card, maybe $18 came back to him, his change, which the division agrees that's changed. That was the number they were using.
So they said that the part that they were aware of the number for and so taxed his wages was the amount they could show that he received from the credit card fares.
No. They were saying it was the money that went from Laclede back to the driver, which they agreed
right,
was the change.
Right, which he received because 10% went to you, and he received the other 90%, and that's what they said he earned, and therefore you owed unemployment tax on.
Also,
not the other money.
Correct, Your Honor. But it would have also been excluding the pro if he chose to pay that out of the fares he collected that particular day.
Then that amount wouldn't be included as wages. So it was
no,
only
it
a very
not.
Small
it,
part.
It makes no sense because there is no relationship between the service provided or the revenue collected. The company also would have no way of knowing because there are no records, no logs, nothing to demonstrate to the company the fares collected that particular day. Practically speaking, it doesn't work. Realistically speaking, these drivers, because the relationship they have and the ability to work when they choose, they're never laid off. All they do is they lease the cab. As long as they pay the lease, they continue to drive that cab. From the standpoint of the underlying purpose, you know, the policy behind unemployment is to provide benefits for those who, due to no fault of their own, have lost their job, have been terminated from employment. In this instance, these drivers look at themselves as entrepreneurs, as running their own business. They don't get laid off. They don't get terminated.
Well, they can be. You can lay them off with, is it 2 weeks' notice?
If we wanted to end the relationship, yeah. But as long as they pay the pro, it doesn't happen. There's no evidence in the record of that ever happening.
Is there any further questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
You'll have some time on rebuttal.
Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the court.
You may proceed.
The question before this court is whether a cab company who retains the complete control to hire and fire its drivers at will should be allowed to avoid its responsibilities under Missouri's employment security laws by claiming that the drivers are independent contractors.
Counsel, before you get to that argument, could you discuss the wage argument, which your opposing counsel says is we need to decide in your favor before we get to that issue?
Certainly. In this case, appellants first point raises the late-in-the-game argument that it did not pay wages to its drivers. That argument was waived when appellant asked the commission to affirm the decision of the appeals tribunal, which includes a determination that wages were paid for services rendered, thereby applying the presumption of employment. That argument was waived when appellant asked the commission to affirm the appeals tribunal decision in its entirety, including that conclusion.
Did the appeals tribunal specifically find it was a wage or just not address that?
The appeals tribunal found, and you'll find in the record, that they did find that they paid wages, and the commission also found, because the appeals tribunal made that determination and Laclede did not make that appeal to the commission or did not raise that in its brief to the commission, that they didn't believe that that was an issue.
But they said they weren't the aggrieved party, and that's why they didn't do it.
Well, here, the commission has the ability to affirm, modify, or reverse. The appellant, in this case, could have still preserved that as an issue and raised that issue to the commission. The commission can't be faulted, in this case, for not deciding an issue that wasn't properly before it.
But why did they need, they'd won in the lower level, they had no need to appeal. There's no requirement that they cross appeal and they got everything they wanted.
In this case, they wouldn't have had to cross appeal, Your Honor. They would have just had to merely present and preserve the issue to the commission in their brief.
But opposing counsel notes correctly that respondents have no obligation even to file anything, much less to preserve things unless they're required to file a cross appeal.
That's correct, Your Honor. And in this case, they actually did file something and they actually did make an affirmative statement.
Counsel, if we were to find that you don't have to file a respondent's brief or raise an issue in your respondent's brief to preserve it, then have they preserved this wage issue?
They have not preserved this wage issue. And just as State Ex Rel Anatoly Sir versus Gateway said, you can't convict an administrative tribunal for error that wasn't properly presented to it. And again, in this case, the appellant, Laclede Cab, did file a brief, and they did state that they wanted the commission to affirm the entire decision of the appeals tribunal.
Did they raise this at the very beginning or at any level?
It's a little difficult to say. They certainly presented evidence that this is what they wanted the appeals tribunal to consider. They certainly made these arguments while introducing testimony. And the appeals tribunal considered it, and they found that wages were paid.
But was this a point at the Western District?
This was their point on appeal? This was a point that they chose not to decide in the Western District because they found that under the common law test for control that there wasn't an employment relationship, and so they decided that they need not address the issue.
But it was a point relied on, as it is here.
It was a point relied on, as it is here, yes, Your Honor.
So why, if we were to reach it, why is he wrong, in your view, that he says they're not wages because they were paid by the customers, not by the company? Wages are paid by the company.
Any and all remuneration received that the cab drivers receive in the performance of their duty under the contract written as part of the consideration under the contract written by Laclede is remuneration. It is a wage for services rendered, just as it was when the Chenault Court in the Eastern District decided this exact same issue, and just as it was when the United States versus Fleming decided the issue and considered that the argument that just because the driver retains the money and cashes out at the end of the day, that's not a wage is a fallacious argument. And here, there's no difference between the driver retaining their portion and giving their pro rate, just as it was in United States versus Fleming, where they retained their percentage of the agreement and handed the rest to the employer in that case.
Did the AHC rule that the cash fares were taxable?
Do you mean the appeals tribunal or the commission?
The commission.
The commission here, they would have found that all wages, all fares, I think that their interpretation here is that all wages, all fares are wages, and all fares are taxable. And
did they find, where is that, or is that only implied?
It's actually the commission's decision on this issue right under their conclusion of law. They first addressed this issue in the first or first two sentences of their conclusions of law, stating that the wages are the money that the drivers received are wages, and they were paid for services rendered.
Well, what opposing counsel says that was only true as to the amount that the taxi company, that Laclede could determine because they were paid by credit cards, and that cash sales they had no records as to, so no taxes were claimed on them, no taxes could be paid. Was there any attempt, say with tips, I know the IRS presumes a 10 or 15% tip and charges taxes on that. Is there anything like that, or was it simply limited to credit card sales?
In this case, it was limited to, because Laclede did not keep records of what its drivers, or did not present records of what its drivers were making in toto, essentially. There was no record of that, so all the auditor could see, Mr. McGovern was correct in this point, all the auditor could see are the amounts that were paid by credit card and maybe vouchers. I'm unsure of the
latter
point.
Do you treat restaurants the same way? For example, waiters get tips. You don't tax those tips, but you tax the money that's paid to the waiters, even though, I mean, in the sense that waiters get tips, but are kind of a compensation.
Plaza 3 decided that issue, and the Missouri legislature then changed it. But the Plaza 3 court, what they decided is that tips are not they're not a condition of service. They're gratuitous in nature, and therefore, they're not a wage. But the Missouri legislature then changed that. And in this case, there's three methods of payment that the cab drivers receive the fares from. There's the voucher system, and all that money goes entirely to Laclede and is then sent to the drivers. There's the credit card system. That money goes to Laclede, and then it's sent to the drivers. And then there's the cash payment. So in the first two instances, Laclede very well knows how much its drivers are making. And in the when it comes to the cash, I think it's an interesting argument to say that there's no way that they could possibly know what these drivers are making when all their calls and all the fares that they're generating come from their dispatch system, where they would know where they're picking somebody up and they would know where they're dropping them off.
Well, what about their point that they can't be wages because they're paid by the customers, not by Laclede?
So that's an interesting argument as well, and you have Judge Teitelman brought up an interesting proposition that who's setting the rate here? And it's the cab company who's setting the rate here. They have to, the code requires that the rate be placarded on the outside of the cabs. And I highly doubt, and this isn't a part of the record, but I highly doubt that the cab company's out there putting different fares on different cabs. I think it's reasonable to surmise that.
But there's no evidence to the fact that if you're a driver in an independent contractor, said, you know, I think this $1.35 and a mile is too low, I'm going to make it $2. Or if it's too high, I'll make it $1. And I'm going to just paint over that and put my own rate on there. Or, you know, this fare to the airport's $35, I'm not charging $50. I'm an independent contractor. Why can't I? But there's no evidence of that. Or is there? I mean, why couldn't they do that? I mean, they could do that, I assume.
There's no evidence on that, but I think it would be difficult for them to do that. And Mr. McGovern, I thought I heard Mr. McGovern say that that's something that he didn't believe was happening, where the drivers were charging lower than what's on the.
Or higher.
Well,
they said, I want a flat rate from the city of $100.
I don't know that they would be able to charge higher, Your Honor, because the rate is established on the outside of the cab, and that's also a requirement of the
code.
But
still, it's the cab's car. I mean, if they're an independent contractor, why can't they charge whatever they want? They're entrepreneurs.
Well,
these cab drivers are entrepreneurs, and why can't they charge what they want, make as much money as they want?
So this is precisely the problem here, is that they're Laclede here is saying that they're independent entrepreneurs, but it's illegal for them to act independently. And not only is it illegal for them to act independently, but there's practical impediments from preventing them from acting independently, because they can't go out and they can't generate.
Well, why is it illegal? The tax commission doesn't say what the rates could be, because there's different cab companies that charge different rates.
The taxi cab commission does set a ceiling on the rate in the code, but
And it does require them to have a cab company's name on the cab and to have the amount, so they can't work for multiple companies with at the same time with the same cab, certainly at least.
Correct.
Certainly not with one they lease from the CLEAT. I doubt they could work for another company.
That's correct. But to get back to Judge Teitelman's question of what in the code is actually preventing them from acting independently, you have to have a CCN to actually act. There's no Jitsi cabs in St. Louis anymore. You have to have or be operating under a certificate of convenience and necessity. And if you are going to act under a CCN, you have to go affiliate with somebody or you have to apply to establish and get a certificate of convenience and necessity. And there's certain requirements and minimum cabs that you have to have in order to get your own certificate of convenience and necessity.
Are there controls that the independent contractor agreement puts on the drivers? Are there rules that are set out, not as a rule book, but in the contract? Does it require certain conduct, certain actions, prohibit other actions?
That independent contractor agreement establishes a whole lot of control, in my opinion. First, you have the voucher customers, and these are preferred customers. These are customers that LaCleat has established a business rapport with for many years, and they are establishing control and saying that you should act in a certain manner with these voucher customers, and you should not deny any reasonable request of these voucher customers. And the cell phone requirement, which Mr. McGovern mentioned, it's found in the independent contractor agreement, but where it really becomes troublesome is the testimony of one of the drivers who said that he was actively trying to get people to call him on and recruit customers to call him on his cell phone, and the company told him that he couldn't do that because it would interrupt the dispatch system. I don't believe that that's actually a part of the independent contractor agreement. I think that's something that came in later.
That's in the evidence where the person tried to recruit customers as an entrepreneur and get more business, and they said you can't do that because it would interfere with the dispatch.
That was the testimony of one of the drivers. And in this case, that's an extremely important point, because you can't CLEAT's arguing that they're independent entrepreneurs, but if they're independent entrepreneurs, why can't they establish their own customer base? And in all the cases that LaCleat cites in its brief, those drivers are actually able to maintain and establish their own customer base. And in this case, they can't, because they're entirely reliant on LaCleat for their fares, and they're entirely reliant on LaCleat for their sole source of income.
And again, I hate to harp back to this, but it's an important separate point, because a lot of these points are relating to the control issue. But opposing counsel says preliminarily we have to determine whether it's a wage, and if we think that's preserved, that would be dispositive and we wouldn't reach the control issue. So your argument is that the amount of the credit card fares that are charged through the CLEAT are LaCleat keeps 10% and pays 90% to the driver who drove the customer, and that is their wage, that 90%. Is that correct?
That's correct. Okay. And that's a part of the consideration that they're entering into. The contract was written by LaCleat, and the drivers entered into that contract. And they, in page 312 of the record, that's a portion of the independent contractor agreement. In paragraph 9F, establishes that the driver is not required to report or account for the fares or other amounts collected by the driver to LaCleat. That's them saying that you're providing us this, that's the consideration of this agreement, is that you're providing us this, the pro amount, and we're allowing you to keep these, the fares. And that's precisely why this is a wage, because it's a consideration of the what I believe is an employment agreement in this case.
And I think opposing counsel would say that, but we at least theoretically let them use other credit card companies, therefore doesn't that negate your argument?
Well, the problem with the credit card and what Mr. McGovern said about the credit card system is that the code establishes that the CCN holder must approve the credit card processing system. system, and Mr. McGovern mentioned Square, and at one point in time, Square was prohibited by the vehicular for hire code in the MTC. They may be able to use that now, but that certainly wasn't true in the past.
The CCN must approve. You mean their certificate must state on it what they're going to use?
In this case, Laclede would have to approve of all credit card systems that the drivers would be
using. And do we know on what they would base their approval?
I have no idea, and that's not based
on. Do we know whether they ever approved any other credit card systems?
In this case, I think the most competent and substantial evidence is that they did not approve any other credit card systems but their own.
Now, this may be a little tangential. Is there any, it relates back to my tangential knowledge and memory of any trust. Are there any illegal tie-ins? I mean, you use that credit card, you have to pay 10% to us. There was that in any trust, but that's another story.
They just want their taxes, not the antitrust trouble damages.
I believe that's correct.
Were any of the rules by the taxi code company, the taxi commission, ever in favor of the employees? Strike that. Not employees, the independent entrepreneurs.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand
your question. Did the taxi commission ever issue any rules that seemed to be in favor, or at least try to aid the independent contractors? Or were they all in favor of the companies? I mean, 3 of the 9 people on the commission are by statute owners of the companies that issue these rules by the commission.
I believe that the entire statutory purpose behind the Metropolitan Taxi Cab Commission is to ensure that there's safe, reliable transportation for the passengers. And I mean, there may be things in there that help the drivers, and there may be things in there, but the entire stated purpose of the statutory scheme is that it favors the customers or the passengers. And if I may just have a moment to close, I know I'm out of time.
No, please go ahead.
Okay. I would like to point out that Bedford Falls, which establishes that the bedrock consideration here is the common right, the common law right to control test. And I can't stress enough to look further into that holding to find that where it's illegal to actually act independently, there must be an employment relationship, and here that exists. In that case, it dealt with real estate brokers. But furthermore, I'd really like this court to look at the plight of these drivers from a 50,000-foot perspective. They are told by Laclede that they're independent contractors, but they cannot recruit, advertise, or retain passengers without going through Laclede's dispatch system, making them entirely reliant on Laclede Cab as their sole source of income. Yet, because of Laclede's treatment of these drivers, they will no longer be protected when Laclede uses this discretion to no longer utilize the driver's services. And that is precisely the reason why appellant's point 2 should be denied and the commission's decision should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Now, could the independent entrepreneurs, could they use Uber? Could they also contract with Harris Cab or any other kind of metropolitan cab and pay their approach too and get business that way? But could they use Uber? I don't know much about it. But
per their license, they can only work for one company, and that company has to have a CCN. I mean, right now there's pending litigation involving Uber in St. Louis, as I understand it.
Well, doesn't that strongly go against being an independent contractor? You're saying they're independent, but they can only work for you?
We're not saying that. That's a requirement of the code.
Well, but the fact is, if they can only work for one company, doesn't that make them like an employee?
Well, at any one time, they could choose to leave that company.
Well, and so can any employee.
As could any independent contractor. I mean,
an independent contractor doesn't have to leave a company because they can work for whoever they want normally. So this would be a very unique situation.
But again, according to K&D and Travelers, this is not something that is dictated by Laclede. It is something dictated by the code and the manner by which the license is issued.
But that doesn't matter. I mean, maybe the code means you've got to hire employees and not independent contractors. That doesn't change whether or not, I mean, and they, I'm not saying they are or they aren't, but the fact that the code says they can only work for one person, it doesn't necessarily mean they're an independent contractor. Maybe it means you can only use employees because they can only work for you.
I guess my response, Your Honor, would be, but they don't have to only work for me. They could choose to go work for another company and have their license through that CCN. but during a particular time, because of the dictate of the code, they are limited to working with that one company based upon the requirements of the code. That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
From the standpoint of, just to address some of the arguments, the idea of waiving the argument, we were the prevailing party. We would not have filed the appeal, but I would also suggest within the briefing we raised the argument on multiple occasions. Council has directed you to Fleming. Within their brief, they direct you to AirCab, they direct you to Higgins. What is significant about each of those cases, and significantly different than Laclede Cab, is the revenue sharing. In each of those cases, the revenue sharing played a significant role with respect to decision. In Air Terminal, the case held that the law found that drivers were not employees in the context where drivers rented cabs by paying a flat fee, but they found as critical and dispositive the fact that there was revenue sharing in that particular case. I think a very interesting point
but
that
was
made.
There's revenue sharing in the vouchers, because when you charge 10% on the vouchers, you're collecting that 10% voucher for the fleet cab. They're getting 90%, but you're collecting the 10%.
But it's not a revenue sharing from the standpoint. It doesn't matter from what Laclede generates in terms of revenue, as long as they pay the pro and there is the charge for the processing of the voucher and the processing of the credit card.
Right. The processing gets you 10%.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
The processing gets you 10% of whatever revenue is brought in on the credit cards or the vouchers.
Correct. But I don't think that in any way suggests a revenue sharing, because the driver takes what has been agreed to by all witnesses of the change. But I think it's significant, as counsel references Plaza 3, and he correctly points out, in that case, Your Honor, as you raised, the wages or the tips were not counted. What the legislature did is change the statute. There still is the issue in 288.090.2 as to wages paid by it. And counsel is suggesting, and the division is suggesting, that money, the credit cards, the cash, somehow constitute a wage. The reality of the relationship is that the customer is, in fact, the driver. The driver, in turn, has customers who are the passengers. That money that's paid, and the driver keeps all of it, is not in any way revenue paid by the company. It is revenue paid by the passengers, and council just, and the division, can't get past that. The testimony, Ms. Rodriguez, at page 139 of her testimony, she specifically agrees that this is not a wage, it is not commission, but it is a reconciliation of the difference between the fares collected, the pro paid, and the credit card processing fee.
Now,
thank
the
you.
Independent entrepreneurs, do they solicit the contracts with the schools for the vouchers, or does the fleet cab do that?
There's no evidence in the record of them doing that or of how that happens. The only reference to vouchers, in fact, I would suggest, Your Honor,
okay, it's under, okay.
There isn't anything in the record to suggest that. I would also suggest to you that when you look at the record, there is nothing in the record that prohibits the drivers from picking up a fare. If they see a fare, if somebody were to call them, they're not prohibited from doing that.
But let's say the schools. I mean, how do you arrange for the schools to pay you, arrangement with the schools to have vouchers for the cabs to pick them up? The independent entrepreneurs don't do that. You must be doing that.
Again, there's no evidence in the record, but the company will have a relationship with the school, and they have a voucher system in place. And the voucher, they may pick up a child, they may deliver somebody to a hospital. Again, there's no evidence on the record of the voucher system at all. But from the standpoint of the manner in which these drivers operate, if I can conclude, Your Honor, just...
Yep, go ahead, just very, very briefly.
The last point I would make, just as to the independent contractor issue. The statute is very specific in 288.034 relative to what you need to look for. And the statute says it's the right to control. And it's the right to control the manner and means by which the results are to be accomplished. The division acknowledges that they should look to the IRS and look to IRS guidance. The IRS has specific provision. We look at IRS Publication 15A, which is the example they use, Tom Spruce, the individual. If I could conclude with their example, it says Tom Spruce rents a cab from Taft Cab Company for $150 per day. He pays the cost of maintaining and operating the cab. Tom Spruce keeps all fares that he receives from customers. Although he receives the benefit of Taft's two-way radio communication equipment, dispatcher, and advertising, these items benefit both Taft and Tom Spruce. In that example, which is very much similar to the manner in which Laclede does business, the conclusion of the IRS is Tom Spruce is an independent contractor.
Is there any further questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The matter will be taken under submission.
Thank you.